Hello, this is Eric Topol from Medscape Editor-in-Chief, and I'm really thrilled to have with me on this podcast Michael Lewis, one of the most extraordinary storytellers of our era and all time. His many books include Moneyball, Flash Boys, The Big Short, Liar's Poker, The Blind Side, and we especially today want to get into his most recent book, The Undoing Project. And so, Michael, welcome.
Thanks for having me.
Oh, it's really a delight, and I think the medical community, those of whom have read The Undoing Project, have followed your work over the years, will easily understand how this applies to day-to-day world of caring for patients. One of the things, of course, that you've been on for many years, in fact, dating back at Moneyball, is this whole idea of perception and cognitive biases. What got you started with all that?
I stumbled into it, and the best way to put it is I was struck by the market inefficiency in baseball. In 2001 and 2002, when I was working on Moneyball, what it got me interested was that you had this team, the Oakland Athletics, that was spending, $30 million on its players, running circles around teams that were spending four times as many. And the question was, how, if the market for baseball players is efficient, could that happen? Why didn't the rich teams just buy all the best players and win all the games? And when I dug into it, the answer was complicated, but part of the answer was the experts in judging baseball talent, the baseball scouts, made a lot of mistakes, and there were these systematic misjudgments that the Oakland A's had exploited, and so found kind of better ways to value the players, namely by using statistics as opposed to using the judgment of the experts. So where that took you to eventually was why were the experts making mistakes? Why was there this essentially clinical misjudgment going on inside baseball? And that, that was something that I did not get to in Moneyball, but I got to in my most recent book, because the answer was the people who started to dig into that answer to answer that question were a pair of Israeli psychologists, Danny Kahneman and Amos Tversky. And my most recent book is about them and what they had to say about the mistakes people make when they're essentially using their intuition to render judgment.
And it's really a fascinating account of two very different people and how the synergy that was achieved. How did you go about getting into this? Of course, Danny was available to you. You had to still alive. Amos, as I guess you call famous Amos, was not. And you had to work through the things that you could. How did you pull it all together?
Well, it seemed because it felt so different from anything I'd ever written. It took a lot of time. I worked on things for a better part of on and off for over 7 years. In the beginning, I started with their papers, but spent an awful lot of time with Danny Kahneman, who happened to live near me in Berkeley, California. But Amos Tversky had left behind file cabinets filled with his papers that remained 20 years after his death in the hallway outside of his office at Stanford. And
that's stunning.
It was stunning. And the thing about Amos was, these two guys created not just one, they created a field of inquiry called judgment and decision making that spawned, among other things, like behavioral economics and fueled evidence-based medicine and fueled the movement away from, say, stock market picking and towards indexing on Wall Street. They touched so many different spheres of human life. And Amos, especially, was regarded as a kind of, in his lifetime, as a genius. And people, when he felt like he died young, and people clung to any piece of him they had. He was a touchstone for a lot of very interesting people. And so it wasn't that hard to recreate him because he lived in people's minds and he had saved enough that I could kind of get at both who he was and what this relationship was between these two men that led them to create this extraordinary body of work. But it was not, it was messy. It was not systematic. I ran around, much of the story was in you know, university towns around the world, and I traveled a lot and talked to, you know, hundreds of people, trying to piece together a memory of both, not just the collaboration, but also the two individuals outside of the collaboration.
No, it's phenomenal, and it really these are the two people that brought together the field in so many respects of behavioral science, behavioral economics, and the understanding of all this human intuition going off track. Now, I think we're going to get into medical diagnosis, and I think, as you well know, this is a serious problem. In the U.S. alone, there's over 12 million major misdiagnoses a year, and in the course of more than half of Americans will have an important misdiagnosis in their lifetime, and nothing has really changed that. So in Danny's book, Thinking Fast and Slow, he obviously, as you well know, he got into the System 1 reflexive fast thinking,
mm-hmm.
and the System 2 reflective slower analytical. And as it's been documented, medical diagnosis today is all System 1 thinking. And that seems to be part of the problem. And you really zoomed into this with, and I don't know how you got to know him, but you obviously got to know him well, Don Redelmeyer at Sunnybrook Hospital, affiliated with University of Toronto, a big part of your Chapter 8, Going Viral. Can you tell me about, and tell us about that whole interactions of learning about Redelmeyer's story?
Yeah, well, part of the problem in writing this story was that Kahneman and Tversky had touched, because they had touched so many places where people were doing things. I mean, so that to kind of get across some of it, it was almost arbitrary where I went. I could have gone to Wall Street, for example, as opposed to into medicine. And I went into medicine because Don Redelmeyer was such an interesting character, and because he had a close relationship with both Amos Tversky and Danny Kahneman separately. They both had seen, Kahneman and Tversky had seen, and once they start to catalog the kind of mistakes the mind makes, they realize that medicine would be an interesting place to go apply what they did or investigate the implications of what they had done. And they both kind of used Redelmeyer as their medical expert to help kind of design tests and things to see how doctors went wrong. So Redelmeyer functions in Sunnybrook in Toronto as a kind of, I mean, he's a general internist, but what he is also is kind of this roving check on doctors' thinking inside the hospital, and people acknowledge him in this role. And you know, he's constantly preaching to his fellow doctors that they're always susceptible to the kind of mistakes that people make when they're rendering intuitive judgments, and what he tries to get across to them is error is not shameful. Like these mistakes that we get ourselves in even more trouble because we think that making mistakes is a sign of ineptitude. And he says error, what Kahneman and Tversky taught us is that error is human. That error, we're hardwired to make certain kinds of errors, and this hardwiring will express itself in the medical environment in certain kind of predictable ways. And if you know about this, you can kind of either check yourself or have someone like Redelmeyer sitting on your shoulder to check you. And I asked, you know, it's funny because you have this guy wandering around the hospital kind of questioning how people got to the diagnosis they got to. And that hospital in particular is interesting because it's situated next to a mammoth freeway where there's, you know, daily accidents and ambulances rushing people in critical condition and who have to have, often can't communicate and have to be diagnosed very quickly. So it's exactly the environment where people make mistakes. So he's in a fertile place to be questioning human judgment. But it is a wonder that the role has not spread and you know, to other hospitals, and it's not formalized. But Donald Redelmeyer, he's famous for for lots of things, but you know, among other things, is he's embarked on a really creative research career on this kind of almost on the side. It's very much in the spirit of Kahneman Tversky.
Yeah, no question. He seems to be really a disciple, carrying it into the world of medicine and almost.
Well, he was
conscience.
The first person. I mean, it's not just. It's funny. What he's done is kind of broaden the notion of what a doctor should be talking about and thinking about. He was the first to make the connection between cell phones and higher risk of mortality behind the wheel of an automobile.
Right.
Way back, whatever, 20
oh, yeah.
years ago.
No, that was a vital thing that he uncovered, no question.
But
one of the things that he wrote a paper with Amos in the New England Journal that you wrote about in the book.
They wrote several, and you know so I don't know exactly which one you're referring to, but riveting ones is this study they designed, and they used Stanford University doctors as lab rats, and what Rettelmeyer was showing was what Kahneman Tversky had illustrated in their work was that when people make judgments or decisions about things, they're often responding. They aren't deciding between the things themselves. They're deciding between the way they're described. And what they did is they went to doctors and they said, "You have a patient with terminal cancer, and is going to be dead within 7 years for sure. But we have this experimental surgery that can be performed on this patient, and if it works, the patient's cured." And they went to half the doctors and said, there's a 90% chance the patient will survive the surgery. And they went to the other half and said, there's a 10% chance the patient's going to die on the operating table. Same thing, just framed differently. 90% survival versus 10% death. And the doctors who were presented with the 90% survival statistic were more than twice as likely to want to perform the surgery. And that's just chilling. That you can manipulate the decision of even a serious doctor by presenting the information in a different way. And this was, you know, it was just the medical one medical expression of Kahneman Tversky's ideas, but Rettelmeyer was behind the framing of that of the study.
Absolutely. And the other one that really caught my eye in the book, and then I went back to read the article, was when the influence of the patient directly that you're looking after versus knowing the literature about patients like that and how much it's influenced, you know, the bias, the judgment is influenced by that person.
I think what both Amos and Dang would say to doctors is you all should have a basic course in statistics, among other things. That the combination of what I think would be very useful for all doctors, and this isn't just doctors, this is a basic understanding of regression to the mean and base rates and statistical concepts that will actually help you think about how you diagnose, combined with a kind of sense of the cognitive biases that we know about, that we are more that you know, if we've seen three cases of appendicitis in a row walk into the emergency room, the fourth person who comes in who manifests some of those symptoms but actually has something else is more likely to be misdiagnosed with appendicitis. That kind of thing.
Yes. Well, the perceptual issues are abundant and pervasive. Have you ever had personally, you or your family, any misdiagnoses or things that were affected that brought this to mind?
Well, it's funny you say that because my wife actually had a misdiagnosis. She did have appendicitis, and they sent her back home from the emergency room, and her appendix ruptured in a hotel room. This was just a couple of years ago. I've seen that. But it's that wasn't alive in my mind when I was writing about the thing. The nature of the relationship between the doctor and the patient kind of regards the doctor as a god, and if he got it wrong, they assume he got it wrong for some good reason. So I'm very slow to imagine that my doctor is susceptible to cognitive error. But but funnily enough, when I told my doctor, who's a wonderful guy, named Dean Nichols in Oakland, California, I told Dean Nichols I was working on this book a couple of years ago, three years ago, and he said, I teach all the young people who come in here to slow down, but precisely because of this, because I've seen so much error. And I'm not sure whether he knew Kahneman Tversky's work, but their work resonated with him.
Oh, man. Well, it's so true. And then the question is, can that switch to system two thinking, the slow down mode, can it be achieved? Now, the other chapter in your book that really delved into this was Paul Hoffman at the University of Oregon. And there was one quote in italics, you could beat the doctor by replacing him with an equation created by people who knew nothing about medicine, had simply asked a few questions of doctors. And any thoughts about what you learned from your research?
Well, it wasn't that psychologists were looking to meddle in the medical practice. All they were trying to do in the beginning was try to model what experts were doing when they made judgments. And they were studying radiologists in that case. And they were showing them x-rays and asking them to diagnose essentially what gastric ulcers. And they were asking the doctors, what are the criteria by which you make these judgments? And they built an algorithm based on what the doctors told them. And all they're trying to do is understand the doctor's thought process. They were innocent in the sense that they had no ambition to challenge the doctor's wisdom. They thought the doctors knew what they were doing. The doctors, mostly did know what they were doing, except that once they had this model, this algorithm for diagnosing from the x-ray, whether a gastric ulcer was cancerous or not, they were shocked to find the model was better at predicting whether the tumor was malignant than the doctors, individual doctors were. And they were bewildered by this finding. And this is back in the late 60s, early 70s, when Kahneman Tversky were just getting going. And it happened to be doing it in the place Eugene, Oregon, where Kahneman Tversky were. So they have this kind of result that this model they've built, very crude model, with the help of the doctors, is outperforming the doctor. A model of man is outpredicting man. And Kahneman Tversky roll in, and they explain why. They explain the various things that are swaying the doctor's judgments in real time when they're presented with the x-rays, that might lead them to underperform the algorithm that the doctors themselves created.
Well, where do you think, with artificial intelligence, medicine is headed? Is that going to fix up the problem, or is it going to introduce new ones?
Well, I'm not qualified to answer that question. And Amos had a very funny line when people asked him if his work had any bearing on artificial intelligence. He always said, I'm much more interested in natural stupidity than I am in artificial intelligence. However, it does seem to me that at some point, we're already at this point where diagnoses, there is a drift towards using statistical analysis, to using algorithms to diagnose patients. It just is like there's a drift towards using algorithms to evaluate baseball players or stock market strategies. So I think that my guess is if I had to guess where everything will go, is that one day people will look back on the idea of a doctor in a room with a patient rendering a diagnosis unaided by some statistical model as archaic. The other thing that enters into medicine and some other walks of human existence is just new technology making it easier to render the diagnosis. I mean, that if you have blood and fluid analysis, doctors getting better information to make their diagnoses with, so they're going to make less, they'll make fewer mistakes.
You know, that's a really good point, you know, that we call like deep phenotyping, but much more in-depth information so it's not so shallow. And then, you know, the ability to use the analytics, the deep learning, in fact, on that. So, you know, another coincidence, a friend of mine here in La Jolla is Paul DiBattista. You may remember him.
Well,
yes.
Paul DiBattista was played by Jonah Hill in the Moneyball.
Yeah, he's with the Browns now. Obviously, he was with many different sports teams, and I guess when you got to know him, he was with the Oakland A's. He's helped us because he's outside the forest, and he is really into algorithms and the analytical mind. And here we are in medicine and, you know, biomedical research, and, you know, we just don't think like that. So he's been a real interesting force for us.
Paul introduces that element that he introduced into baseball, and it's that you can questions you think are settled questions are not necessarily settled questions. That a baseball field to an old time baseball person before the Paul DiBattista era, they'd say, "I know everything about baseball." And what Paul DiBattista was saying, no, there's an awful lot we don't know about baseball. That a baseball field is a field of ignorance, and that we should be maintain a spirit of inquiry in the face of these problems, like how to value a baseball player. And Don Rettelmeyer, you know, to get back to him, would say the same thing about medicine, that medical diagnosis is you know, the doctor is not infallible. He doesn't know everything. And it's a shame that we need to thrust him in a position where he has to seem infallible in order to make everybody feel good, because we're much better off if he's very aware of how highly fallible he is and how little we do know. That's how progress happens. You start by acknowledging what you don't know. And I think Paul that's probably a big thing he introduces into medicine, just asking really simple questions that everybody thinks they kind of know the answer to, but in fact, the answer is more complicated than that.
You nailed it. That's why he's so good for us. And I guess you could say he's kind of like the Don Rillemeyer in our group. But, you know, I just want to finish up, though, by saying the contributions you made here, you may not have fully appreciated when you wrote The Undoing Project, no less your prior books, really are impactful. And I think it's great that our Medscape WebMD community can tap into this, because I think it really helps of slowing things down. And diagnosis, as you can appreciate, is really the whole gateway to everything in medicine. And we have so much room to improve it. And so it's great that you spent these 7 years working with Danny and Amos and understanding how that whole field came together. So thank you so much for this work, and also for the chance to discuss everything with you today.
Well, thanks for taking an interest.